Accession number 30,004, Mr. Len Selick, Real 4. Now, so let's go on with the day. You had your breakfast.
Yeah.
What would you do? What, you know, your training is a while, so what would you do first session or something? Not necessarily first, but in the morning.
It would. Training would vary. Again, very important was fitness. So there would always be an hour at least, sometimes twice a day, in the in PT, as it was called.
What type of PT are they doing there?
No, it was the same. It was rope climbing. It was whatever took his imagination. There was a lot of response. The one I always remember is the response, the running up and down, touch the wall behind me, go. You know, pretty basic.
Did they bring in the assault course at
I think, you know, I probably only went on an assault course in my entire service career three times in the Mace.
Most.
There was one. It wasn't important. We were not infantry. They didn't expect the same standards.
PT, what else are you doing?
Then we had, again, regimental history. They always seem to find something to say about that. And
did
then...
Did it work? Did you...
Well, I suppose...
Were you proud in your regiment or the Royal Artillery? Did it work, what they were trying to get?
Proud? I don't think so. Not me personally, but that's what it was aimed at.
But with you, it just didn't take?
It didn't take, really. It's something that, I mean, I didn't volunteer for this. I didn't want to be there particularly. In fact, I definitely didn't want to be there. After being in there for a few weeks.
What sort of PT, lectures?
Lectures.
What else?
Well, mainly the radio training then. Now, luckily, by that time, Morse code had gone out. So I did very little Morse code. In fact, it was disappeared. I did a little bit of Morse code.
How did you take the Morse code?
Well, it was okay. I mean, but it was very, very basic. And it was very, very sudden that it wasn't to be anymore. I think even that was put in because we were running an old syllabus, virtually. And then they realised, well, Morse code is not the thing.
How did you practice it? Or did you not get
far? You had a key. They had a few of these old keys. They're all broken anyway. They never worked, you know. Half the equipment was broken. And then we go on to signalling, which was radio, of course. And
which wireless were you doing?
We was on a 19 set, mainly. But occasionally they would bring out, I can't remember the number, 32 set, I think. One of them, anyway, would be sort of walkie-talkie, but bigger. We didn't really use walkie-talkies. They were quite big. And then, which you could carry, which was in a frame to carry, and then a 19 set which you couldn't carry. It weighed a ton, and so did the batteries.
19's a famous old thing.
Yeah.
Used forever.
Yeah.
I mean, what was it? How did you operate it? Just describe it.
The trouble with our 19 set, it was, oh God, the procedure here. Netty call, net now. Somebody would send out a signal from the main, from Sunray, which was the CO's one. It was always pretend. Sunray, he wasn't there really. You would tune it in like an old-fashioned radio with a whistle, and then lock it.
They won't understand that. What do you mean by a whistle?
Well, when you're searching for a station, when you're searching for a rail, even an ordinary radio station, you will hear noise and just call it a whistle. And once you got it, at the lowest pitch. Pretty primitive stuff. And then you would lock it on.
You could
lock it on there, but if you move the if the radio was in a vehicle, which we very rarely did at Real, it could move off again. You'd have to retune it. But the interesting thing about our 19 sets were the instructions were printed in Russian. British set printed in Russian. This apparently was, they were destined, that's how old our stuff was, destined for the Russian army. And then the war ended and they were never sent, and so we had them instead. But all instructions were in Russian. So we would, that's what we would train on, and it was pretty consistent. There would be at least two or three signalling lessons per day.
And were you doing all the voice procedures as well?
You know, and a voice procedure was a separate thing. You didn't need the radio in front of you to do voice procedure.
What were the voice procedures then? And that includes things like the alphabet, because they've got a different alphabet.
Well, yeah. Again, that changed. I had to learn two. The old one, Abel Baker Charlie dog to Alpha, Bravo, Half. I still get confused. I had to do the two of them during that period at Real. They changed everything when I got there.
And what about all the other boys, all this Roger and Out and all that stuff? Did you learn all that? I don't know whether Roger and Out was part of it.
Well, there seems, yeah, but I think they were getting in sort of NATO-ish and were trying to sort of make it a little bit of both, American as well. The only one, the expression we were forcibly reminded does not exist, is over and out. You can't do over and out. You can do out, you can do over, but you can't do over and out, because over means over to the other radio. What's the point in having out? Over means respond to me. And there were other ones like Wilco, I will conform, and there were, we had to learn all those different expressions. We had to learn radio procedure for, as I say, Sunray was the commanding officer, whoever that may be, was always Sunray. Sitrep was a situation report. So there was quite a lot in voice procedure to learn.
Was there anything different on the, we don't know quite, the more portable wireless, was there anything different about the procedures you were learning?
No, they're exactly the same. One of the interesting things they told us, that the best voice of procedure is a Highland Scottish woman. It's the easiest one to understand.
Now, were you learning how wirelesses worked, or were you just and how to repair them? Or
basic valve repair. I think we had a box of four valves as spares permanently. They were valves, obviously. Other than that, it wasn't really feasible to do repairs. There was a procedure where you had four separate valves. If it was one of them gone, you could actually do it, and you had the wherewithal to do it. But after that, no, nothing mechanical.
It was that you just learned that.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
So there was no training on.
The no training. No. There went, telephone was another thing.
That's
a field
telephone.
Field telephone, or Tele-L as it was known as, had. Not the same procedure was not necessary, because it was a sealed line, so you didn't have to talk about Sunray and COs. You could actually say somebody's name, even allegedly. The different methods of using it, one with a double cable and another one which is earth return, you could plug it straight into the earth at one end, straight into the earth at the other end, and you had a connection with single wire, which made it possible to put more wire out, so you could put 5 miles of wire out because it wasn't entwined wire, things like that anyway. But the, as I say, the procedure was different.
And what about when you did you actually practice laying out?
Yes, we did quite a lot. You had to lay it so that I always remember going farm gates, you weren't allowed to, you had to lay it I think 12 inches deep in case a tank went over it and so on. There was enormous procedure for laying the cables and wiring out.
What about switchboard procedure?
There was a small switchboard, can't remember the number of it, to each of the guns it would be, or to the CO. Can't remember too much about that, but we certainly had the switchboard, yeah. And you had to learn the switchboard. But I've forgotten that. Never.
Any other signal training you were doing? Or wireless or television?
I can't think of anything else, because...
How about putting aerials up? Sorry, it's just a...
Well, aerial, of course, was another procedure for the radio. We put up a sort of 12-foot aerial, and it'd have the huge range of about 5 miles maximum, so they weren't as efficient as we have now.
Did you put them up? I mean, were they off the vehicle?
Well, on the vehicle, because you would be mobile. When you are actually using the radio for what it was really meant for, you would have had it on mounted on a vehicle which had the boss already on there, and they were just extended sort of copper tubing painted khaki, and you just slot them in. Some of them, I remember, had a wire through the middle and you could pull them into a sort of telescopic whip. I thought they were quite good.
Any other training?
Well, you again would have the small arms training, that type of training.
About the weapons training with the army.
The weapons training with the army was very, very limited, really. You would fire a few rounds off when the officer thought it wasn't important in the artillery. The more important thing were the guns themselves, which I, of course, had nothing to do with.
So, a bit of Lee Enfield?
Lee Enfield, 303 Lee Enfield, Sten gun. Because I was... When I went in the army, I already had a driving licence. This automatically would make me, when I'd passed my signals, a driver-operator, which was a trade in the artillery, and I got extra money for. And then my only weapon I would have after that would be a Sten gun. I didn't have to carry a rifle.
Now, what did you think of the Sten? Because that's a... It's quite a controversial weapon.
When it's been, the only time I used it is later on with live ammunition. They're very dangerous.
You didn't get to practice it then at that stage?
Yes, I did, but that was under total supervision. When it was used as a weapon and I had live ammunition, when I wasn't being supervised on a range, of course, that's when it became dangerous.
What's dangerous about it? Can you just explain?
Holding it. There was always a joke, if you hold it wrong, you know you're holding it wrong if your fingers start coming out the end of the barrel. Which is, they always insisted on that.
So you can get your fingers crossed.
You could get your fingers crossed. And they weren't very... We had somebody who shot a hole through his hand because he was in the naffy and he dropped it and the bolt went bang, bang. Through his hand.
Did they warn you about that? Because that was well known for years.
It was well known, but they didn't particularly warn us because at that time I think it was very unlikely that we were ever going to use it anyway. I didn't carry it everywhere. I did most of my service without a weapon. It was only for the last 3 months that I was actually armed in the whole thing, whereas in the infantry I'm sure they use more of it.
Any other training you were doing during these sort of day sessions?
We would sometimes, when we had an officer with a sense of humour, we would be told to climb Snowdon with a radio on our back and two big car batteries, and that's what they weighed, which I objected to very strongly.
That must have been very tough.
That was hard. It was even harder when I finally climbed, I'd never been to Snowdon before, climbed the top with a 32 set on my back, to the top of Snowdon, and then discovered there was a railway line up there. Nobody told me about. Did not please me.
So, that's anything else?
Can't think of any other particular training. It was geared to, because the eyes of artillery is definitely radio and telephone, and so they certainly concentrated on that for the full 6 weeks.
Now, what about, how did you sort of, you seem to have been more unhappy. You were saying you're all right at Oswestry, but you didn't like Rhyl.
Well, I'd like to explain the reason. After I was at Rhyl for 2 weeks, there was and was sent on my first leave home. I came back on leave, and at that time there was a railway strike, and we couldn't get back, and it was announced on the radio that we should report to our nearest military unit, which in my case I chose to go to Wellington Barracks near Buckingham Palace. So I went there, and they were issuing passes to stay home. This is what we were told on the radio would happen. I queued up for that, nearly got a pass to go back home. To cut a long story short, they found some old lorries and decided to take us back to camps all over England, including Rhyl. And I went back to Rhyl in the back of a lorry. It took him 38 hours. It was a bit odd just to go to Rhyl. And when I got back, I was late by the next morning. Instead of back on the evening, as my pass said, I was back the next morning. And I was charged with being absent without leave. I was given 7 days CB, which is confined to barracks, as a form of punishment. And at that time, and in that place, I went back to the hut, and very few of the camp was empty. Most people just couldn't get back. I declared war on the army. And I was uncooperative from there on.
That's how you felt.
That explains the rest of my service career. I spent the rest of my service career, without getting into serious trouble, being trouble. What in the army is known as, of course, as a skiver. which reached its ultimate when the colonel of our regiment called me the biggest skiver in the regiment, and my proudest day in the army when he said that. I'd achieved. Took a long while.
Well, come on. But that was what started it.
That's what started it.
And what was being confined to barracks? Could you just explain to them?
Confined to barracks means, of course, you couldn't go out. That's simple enough. It meant going to whatever nasty job they had, as well as doing your normal day's training. You would have to parade in front of the guardhouse in full FSMO, which is full service marching order, weighing something like 60 pounds. It was your pouches, your packs, your rifle, the whole bit, or whatever weapon. Immaculate, otherwise you'd have to do it again. You could do it morning, you could do it on the lunch break, you could do it in the evening. And in the meantime, any spare time you had, you could be cleaning saucepans in the cookhouse or scrubbing something out. That's what it really meant. It was more than just being confined to barracks. So you were lucky when you had CB to finish 11 o'clock at night, whenever, because you'd be preparing to go and parade the next day. You'd be scrubbing and polishing boots. So it wasn't very a happy thing. And I thought I was treated unjustly. And I was treated unjustly. And that's when I broke with tradition.
Now, anything else about your time there? You were there, what, 6 weeks?
So yeah.
That would be what? April into May?
Yeah.
Anything about Alfred?
Well, I qualified for me cross flags, i.e. the mark of a signaller. I automatically became a tradesman because I already had a driving licence, and I was posted to the...
So you qualified as a driver signaller?
A driver, yeah. It was known as a driver op.
Sorry, yeah. I've got that wrong.
Driver operator. Yeah, driver operator. It meant you drove, and which is useful, of course, with you know, moving the radios about for itself.
How are you getting on with the lads there?
I mean, fine. I made other friends. That's but only a couple were posted to my next regiment. But I never had any social problems with any. I witnessed others who did. I saw the bad treatment that could be handed out, and I'm proud to say I didn't join in. We had a country boy there. That would be called bullying. I saw a country boy there who he should never have been in the army. He was filthy, he couldn't wash properly, couldn't do anything properly, and he was severely bullied.
In what way?
Well, he was scrubbed with a yard broom. He was called, they had an expression, dirt bird. If you were a dirt bird, you really did suffer. It comes straight from the farm somewhere, God knows where. And the poor kid, you know. And they opened his locker once and found his food, stash of food that was mouldy in it. And the biggest crime of all was to be a dirt bird anyway. Which, fortunately, I was not. I wasn't the smartest soldier, but I certainly wasn't the...
What about the instructors there?
They encouraged the bullying. They actually said, he is costing... They were always keen on being the top hut and the top this and the top platoon. And if you had one or two guys that were not toeing the line or couldn't, and I always thought couldn't, he would encourage the others to bully that man to bring him in line.
Do you think this competitive approach worked? I mean, it didn't work on you after you'd been charged, but what about before then?
Yeah, I was quite pleased to do me bit and do it right. If I was given a job of, I don't know, cleaning the floor or whatever, I'd try and make a good job of it.
So you did take part in the...
I did do that before I had a problem with the army. Then it changed.
Then you opt out.
I opted out after that. I would put a toffee paper after that or something where they wouldn't see it, but I knew it was there. And that suited my mentality. You think I've cleaned the floor? I haven't. There's a toffee paper under the foot of that bed. That type of thing. Silly, but it pleased me.
Now, and the instructors were the same sort of men as at Oswestry?
Yes, they were. Yeah, yeah.
Any better or any worse?
They were a bit more friendly. They were more approachable. We had a very old sergeant, Sergeant Bastera or something like that. And one of his tricks was to encourage you to run at him with a bayonet, and he would disarm you. a very old soldier. He was probably in his 50s, which was pretty old for a soldier then. Tough as old boots, but a fair man. He'd been in long enough that he got past the bully, and he knew he could do that, and had been doing it for 30 years. So he would actually be fair, and he would actually talk to you and sit on the bed and have a chat with you. And next minute, he'd be ferocious, you know, that sort of thing.
What about the...
So I quite admired
the
him.
The wireless and the signalling. They didn't know that stuff.
Oh, yes, they did, yeah. We had to give a lecture on the Tele-L, and we all had to go up and do one of those, and they were quite fun. We all enjoyed that, but that was getting towards the end of the training. I had one where I put it on the rafters and got a friend and tied a bit of thread to it and started my lecture with God give me a Tele-L set, and he pulls the string and it drops in my hands, that type of thing, and you got praise or none for your presentation. So I did well with my presentation.
What about in the evenings? Would you get out at all?
Oh, yeah. You could in real, yeah.
Where would you go?
Yeah. We'd go into town, we'd go to dances, go to pubs.
Now, what would it like going to a dance or a pub in real? Because, you know, how did they react to the army being there? Because, you know, localised are always like...
There was people earning good money, I would have thought, from them. There was a huge amount of soldiers passing through there. They all spent money. The dancers were quite pleased. Didn't see a lot of military police. I think you always imagine that in an army thing there'd be a military police, but what you did see, you might see some sergeant from your regiment, so you more or less behaved. I don't remember bad behaviour. I don't remember fights. I was unable to drink beer, still unable to drink beer. I did, but it didn't interest me particularly.
So you'd go what? Cinema, nightclub,
dance halls? Dance halls, and stay with the lads or dance with the girls, but very rarely, because I'm still not a good dancer, so I never quite learnt that. I did go to a dance lesson, and I was wearing hobnail boots the whole bit, full uniform, boots and gaiters, and this woman was trying to teach me the reverse turn in the tango, which I really didn't need. It's a bit too advanced. But we had the creep. In those days, the dance was called the creep, and anybody can do the creep.
Anything else about your time at Real then?
Yeah, not really. No, I can't remember any particular instances. Oh, my girlfriend, who later became my wife, and my mother visited me there and caused quite a sensation, because I was cleaning some lorry parts when Noreen came wandering around the camp looking for me. And I was allowed time off when she found me. And they said, oh, you know, it was rather nice. And she started getting wolf whistles all the way around. She wasn't supposed to be there. But
she just wandered in.
She wandered in, and my mother was still in real, you know. That was a nice one.
So where were you posted? You were there for about May. What was your next posting?
The next posting was my final posting, which was to the 61st Field Regiment, 170 Imjim Field Battery. We were supposed to be quite proud of that, but not bothered. And it was at Tidworth in Salisbury Plain.
At Tidworth Camp, is it? Or?
Yeah, it's a big military camp.
And you went there in May?
Yes, yeah. It would have been May, I think. You'll have to allow me on dates.
We'll put a clock on.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what was it? You'd already lost your enthusiasm for the... Can you just talk to me? You were going to a new unit. You could have started again. What was your...
I could have started afresh, but when I got to the main unit, which actually slows down, it wasn't that bad, but I still had this idea that what I could get away with in the army as opposed to what I could do. I like to think that I was in the army, but I was never, ever a soldier. And to me, there's a big difference, and still is.
And what was your reception like when you joined?
Oh, that was fine. No, there was a bit of jealousy occurred, I remember. I got to the camp, and there was a bit of resentment for a while. Because what happened was, as soon as I got there, I was told to go and draw a brand new Champ vehicle from the car park, and that I was to be troop commander's driver. Now, the only reason for that is all the rest had army licences, and the troop commander, Captain Lacey, would have preferred somebody who had a civilian license and who had taken at some time or other a proper driving test, which was me. Now, those who knew they were in line to be troop commander's driver did resent me for quite a long while, that I actually walked in and took the best, the cream job, actually. It was the best job.
Which troop was it? A or B or?
It was dog troop.
D?
Yeah. It was still called dog troop as opposed to delta troop as well. Dog troop.
How did you fit it? I mean, what about the rest of the... I mean, there's a bit of jealousy about that. How did the rest of them sort of...
No, then I only have good memories, you know, of the lads who supported me. Lance Hughes was one of them. He could never... I used to set myself a target of returning to London on a 36-hour or just a weekend pass every weekend, whatever. And Lance would often help me to do this. He would, you know, look after things. It was the idea of emptying me pockets and changing into civvies to go back to London mainly is what I did, and throw me money on the bed and just leave it there, and it was still there when I came back. That says a lot about the people you serve with.
Now, how did you get so many weekend leaves? Or did everybody have the option?
I bribery and corruption mainly. If I had a guard duty to do, I could give somebody a couple of packets of cigarettes to do it for me. There wasn't much happening, and for the first year or so in our regiment on Salisbury Plain, we did very little. I was a driver. You'd have a parade in the morning. The gunners,